So we're continuing in local news and features. We're in batch number 6. It's Tim and Liz. We have 4 more stories for you. My headlines are: police under fire for arresting Jesus after he tried to jump off Hanley Bridge. Try not to laugh at this one. And end of an era for the Stoke-on-Trent town as old landlines are to be switched off. And over to Liz. Her headlines are:
the big interview, Chris McCausland. I didn't want to be the blind comedian. I just wanted to be a comedian. And thieving diners pinching £2 pumpkin decorations from Top Stoke Tea Room.
Wonderful stuff. So I'm going to do the first story now, and we will try not to laugh. So police are under fire for arresting Jesus after he tried to jump off Hanley Bridge. 53-year-old Lee Bodman has been fined £50 after he admitted being drunk on a highway. North Staffordshire Justice Centre heard a third party called the police at 8 o'clock in August and reported a man on a bridge on Town Road over Potteries Way. Prosecutor Susan Swindale said they were concerned he was going to jump off the bridge. Police attended and the man appeared to be under the influence. He stated he was Jesus. Police tried to ascertain his name. He refused and stated his name was Jesus. Police eventually got his name. He was arrested and conveyed to the Northern Area Custody Facility. He said he consumed 4 to 5 cans of beer. Sarah Bedford, mitigating, said that Bodman, who has 72 previous convictions for 155 offences, was in a suicidal state at the time and was threatening to jump off the bridge. She added, rather than wrap their arms around him, they decided to prosecute him. He was seen standing on the wrong side with his arms in the air, holding on to nothing, but he has been prosecuted. He is getting help for his alcoholism. The reason this has happened is his father has passed away quite suddenly a week or so before. He spiralled into despair and increased his alcohol use. Bodman of Muston Street, Birch's Head, must also pay £85 costs and a £20 surcharge. So over to Liz, who's going to do the next story for us in batch number 6.
Okay, this is Chris McCausland, who won the Strictly competition last year. It's not strictly a local story, but it is about a man, a blind man, and it's what he thinks of life, really. So the headline is, I didn't want to be the blind comedian. I just wanted to be a comedian. For much of his life, Chris McCausland was consumed by the pursuit of normal. Born with an hereditary eye condition that steadily eroded his vision through childhood and adolescence, the would-be comedian never learnt Braille, wouldn't use the word blind, even when legal blindness arrived at the age of 22, and refused to walk with a white stick. If I'm not identifiably disabled, that gives me the room to pretend I wasn't, he reflects. So I masked my poor eyesight. I always made out I could see more than I could, and I think that desire to be normal is a horrible word, but that's how I thought of it. It hindered my acceptance. It got me into more trouble than if I just owned it. All of which is why, 2 decades on, McCausland stepping onto the Strictly Come Dancing dance floor last year for its 22nd series meant quite so much. This wasn't just about a Saturday night booking for someone who was by then a successful comic and regular fixture on panel shows from Have I Got News For You to Would I Lie To You. It was about a then 47-year-old man embracing who he was as the first blind contestant on a BBC One show which millions consider part of the national fabric, for a journey, to use Strictly speak, that turned out to be one of the most moving in the programme's history. No wonder he went on to win it. Turned out quite well in the end, didn't it? He chuckles. McCausland is speaking from the southwest London home he shares with his wife Patricia and their 11-year-old daughter Sophie. We are here to discuss his memoir, Keep Laughing, which his publishers asked him to write after off the back of the Strictly success. He is particularly pleased with the title. You've got a subtle little marketing link with Strictly because of Keep Dancing. But also, in 3 years' time, when it's in a bargain bin, it works on its own. I haven't called it Strictly comedy or something naff like that. It fits his worldview too. It's about overcoming adversity, how to keep going in the face of things. You've got to laugh, otherwise, well, you'll kill yourself, won't you? He says, every bit as dryly as you'd expect. The book is a witty account of his rise in comedy and a candid reflection on life with a gradual sight loss, an emotional honesty he thinks he reached only because of Strictly. If I had written it a year ago, it would have been a different book, he says. I think I would have kept the emotion of losing my sight quite closed off. Coming out of Strictly, everybody had already seen him crying on the telly. It felt easier to write because I'd already let people see that side of me. The memoir took shape earlier this year while McCausland was riding the Strictly success and juggling a mammoth, much-extended stand-up tour, Yonks. It required long hours at his desk, dictating his memories to his computer. I'm really pleased with the result, he says. I'm never going to be happy with it completely because I'm never happy with anything I do, but I'm as happy with it as I could be because I'm proud of myself for being so open. After all, I'm a bloke who grew up in Liverpool in the 80s. It has always been very much dig a hole and bury things. McCausland was raised by a firefighter father and a mother who stayed at home. She, like McCausland's sister and grandmother, shares the same eye condition, which is more slowly progressing in women than it is in men. Sexist, he quips. He recalls large print children's books getting lost after following strangers who he'd thought were his family and... Sorry, I should have done a comma there. He recalls large print children's books getting lost after following strangers whom he'd thought were his family, and how for years he believed his address to Craigside Avenue was to Craig T.O. Craigside Avenue because he never saw it written down. He wondered how the postman knew which house the letters were meant for. Where I'm lucky, he says, is that sight loss was always in the family. If you have a child who suddenly becomes blind, at 12, it's a lot of trauma in one go. In our family, nobody had to get used to a single moment, so they always laughed at themselves and the situations they got into. McCausland followed suit. The day he wandered into an undertaker's thinking it was a barber's, for instance, and had a confusing exchange with the voice asking, "Can I help you?" Perhaps then he was always designed for a life in comedy. After studying software engineering at Kingston University and taking a string of office jobs, plus, he notes with a laugh, a rejection from MI5, he dared himself to take to the stage on an open mic night. The buzz hooked him. Tiny, sticky-floored rooms gave way to bigger stages and the show and the slow accretion of craft. Early on, he made a strategic choice about material. I didn't want to be a blind comedian, he says. I just wanted to be a comedian. He would acknowledge his blindness and then move on. As I started getting longer sets, maybe I'd drop in a little bit here and there, but it would always be the absolute minimum. He thinks the approach served him well. I did better in comedy because of it, he says. As much as we like to think that audiences are accepting of anybody, they've got thresholds. They reach a point where they go, OK, that's enough. I'm interested, but not that interested. Doing comedy that was nothing to do with being blind, I think it made me more appealing. A broader profile arrived through the panel show circuit, but nothing moved the needle like Strictly. Famously, McCausland had never seen an episode and turned the show down several times. It was fairly obvious to me they wanted their first blind contestant. How did that make him feel? I think it's hypocritical for somebody like myself to complain about box ticking and also say there should be greater representation, he says. If you want to increase representation, you've got to tick boxes. And this was exactly the representation I believe in on mainstream programming. And yet, I just didn't think they'd thought it through. Honestly, you wouldn't have a blind guy on, say, Watercolour Challenge. There are some shows that aren't for us. We appreciate representation, but here we are, but there are certain things beyond our capabilities. He worried about failing and what that would be taken to mean. If I did it and it was a disaster, nobody would have benefited. It wouldn't have been, Chris is terrible. It would have been, blind people are terrible. Disabled people are terrible. When he eventually said yes, having been persuaded by his wife, he realised there was a flip side he found just as troubling. He didn't want a dumbed down experience. Partnered with Diane Buswell, he insisted they didn't play it safe. If we hadn't done lifts, if we hadn't gone at the speed we were going, people would have noticed. They're not stupid. They'd have gone, it's a bit boring, and thought blind people can only dance boring. That would have been just as damaging. So I said to Di, I'd rather go out in week one trying something mad than be in for 8 weeks and be boring. And so they made TV that stuck. Take, for instance, their couple's choice routine, which featured a blackout section that briefly plunged the studio into darkness, inviting viewers to experience what he dances through. Then there was the waltz to You'll Never Walk Alone, a love letter to McCausland's Liverpool roots. Given that this was all unfolding during a season in which Strictly was buffeted by scandals, that were at least distracting, McCausland and Buswell's run was the antidote, pure joy. The impact on McCausland was immediate. I barely cry at the best of times, but I had to stop myself from crying all the way through the waltz, he says. It was a lot. I just fell apart. The messages poured in, not only from blind people and the wider disabled community, but from schools, from people who were grieving, people with agoraphobia, anxiety or eating disorders, saying that watching him step so outside his comfort zone nudged them to take a step of their own. Now that the new series is underway, is any part of him jealous? No, not really. It's not the kind of thing you can do twice, he says. At home, Patricia, a psychologist, is a Strictly devotee. They met in 2005, and while his blindness has an impact on their relationship in small ways, they have plenty of other things to share. The prospect of fatherhood, though, caused him considerable anguish. Looking back, he can see how self-focused those fears were. You're thinking about how inadequate you'll feel. The shift came with Sophie herself. You learn what the full scope of parenting is while you're in it. They're not going. Practically, you're a bit of a disappointment, aren't you? He laughs. It changes how you view your limitations, your shortcomings. It changes how you view yourself. And his book, Keep Laughing, is out now, it says, published by Michael Joseph, £25. What it doesn't say, so I'm going to ask Tim, is there an audio version of it?
I can find out.
He'll find out.
I'll let you know the next story. Okay, so my next story now, in batch number 6, is end of an era for this Stoke-on-Trent town as old landlines are to be switched off. Ooh. Now, copper cables that have helped us stay connected for over 100 years have been sent to the history books. The UK is gradually transitioning to faster and more reliable FTTP, fibre to the premises technology, which not only enhances internet access speed, but also introduces new features for phone users. The switch to fibre and so-called digital voice services, which use the web to make phone calls, has been going on for a while now, and it's now been confirmed that another 95 locations will soon be affected by the upgrade. Burslem has been named as one of the 95 locations on the latest list. What Openreach classes as Burslem has not been disclosed. BT Openreach has issued stop sell alerts. It means that new customers and those upgrading their current deals won't be able to sign up for copper-based services. Stop sell is triggered when a majority of 75% of premises connected to a particular exchange can get ultra-fast full fibre. Although this update won't affect any existing users, it will change how people stay connected in the future. Moving away from trusted copper might sound like a daunting change, but it comes with some benefits. Along with much better broadband, full fibre offers speeds that are over 10 times faster than copper. The move to digital voice also offers better quality phone calls, along with new features such as spam call blocking and call diverting to a mobile phone. Openreach has also confirmed that customers not yet able to get ultra-fast full fibre at their premises won't be impacted and can stay on their existing copper-based service until fibre, full fibre does actually become available. The Stop Cell programme is a critical part of ensuring that the UK's communication infrastructure is ready to meet the demands of the future. James Lilly, who is Openreach's Managed Customer Migrations Director, explained that taking advantage of the progress of our full fibre build and encouraging people to upgrade where a majority can actually access our network is the right thing to do, as it makes no sense, both operationally and commercially, to keep the old copper network and our new fibre network running side by side. As copper's ability to support modern communication declines, the immediate focus is getting people onto newer, future-proof technologies. Already, our full fibre network is available to 20 million premises, around 60% of the UK, with more than 7.7 million homes and businesses currently taking a service. Very interesting, that. Over to Liz now, who's going to do the final story for us in Batch 6.
Thieving diners pinching £2 pumpkin decorations from top Stoke tea room. Customers are pinching Halloween decorations from a tea room. The Rabbit Hole Tea Room on Glebe Street in Stoke has splashed out on the decorative £2 mini pumpkins from Sainsbury's, but half of them have already disappeared after being swiped by customers. It comes as mini glasses have also been stolen. In a social media post to diners, the venue stated, "It has come to my attention that some of our mini pumpkins used for decoration have gone missing. They were only £2 each from Sainsbury's. However, they were purchased out of my own money to decorate our tables. Yes, it is only £2 per pumpkin, but it's quite upsetting to find out that people think it's okay to just take something from us. It's not just one missing. Half of what I purchased are now gone. We do not have endless funds to replace things, especially with this year being one of the toughest for us. Unfortunately, this also happens with our mini drink glasses. It will get to the point where we will not be able to afford to replace them. Please don't take items from us. It's not nice and it stops other customers having the experience of our little seasonal touches. We know the majority of our customers would never, ever do this. So apologies to all our wonderful supporters for this post."
Okay, so keep listening. We have the one and only quiz coming up for you and some more stories for you coming up in batch number 7.